Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Deborah Becker. 45 years ago today, in Cambridge, marked the last live performance of a musical icon.
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends don't drive Porsches. I must make amends.
Janis Joplin performed Mercedes-Benz on August 12, 1970, at Harvard Stadium. It was her final time on stage. She died less than 2 months later of a drug overdose.
At Harvard Stadium that night, 40,000 fans crowded the field to see Joplin, who was at the height of her career. Among them was music and film critic Ed Simkus, who joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Dee Dee Stewart, Associate Professor of Voice at Berklee College of Music. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
So, Ed, let's start with you. What was that last concert like? I mean, now there's all kinds of legend, right? People swarming Harvard Stadium, police worried about disturbances, missing equipment, right? There's all kinds of stories. What do you remember?
I was working that concert. I was a quote-unquote security guard. I was one of the, if anybody went there, I remember a bunch of people wearing bright red shirts with big white peace signs on them. And it was our job to keep people from climbing the fence and getting in free. Everybody wanted to see Janis Joplin.
How'd you do?
I was not a very good security guard because it was 1970 and I was a sophomore in college and I was a young hippie. And if anybody gave any one of us a joint, we would turn our back and let them climb the fence. That night, people just climbed in like crazy. Everybody wanted to see Janis. I don't know how many were there, but I do vividly remember that there were a lot of people behind the stage.
And what was the performance like? Obviously, no one knew then that it was going to be her last performance.
What I remember was the delay more than anything else because their equipment was stolen. So all of the crowd was there, and they were getting a little anxious. And the MC was a gentleman named Bud Ballou, who was a DJ on WMEX at the time. And he had to keep going up to the microphone saying, it's just going to be a little bit longer. And the crowd was getting restless. I remember about the performance. It was kind of short. There were maybe 8 songs performed, which was what she was doing at that time. When the show finally started, everybody was really into it. There was no problem in the crowd at all. I only remember one song, Summertime, which is my favorite Janis Joplin song because I had seen her play it before at Woodstock. And that was the thing that kind of still sticks out in my mind. Although she was getting ready to record what would be her last album. Maybe they had already started recording Pearl. So there were a few songs from there. There were songs that nobody had ever heard. So, you know, and
Mercedes-Benz that we heard in the beginning. That was a little preview that she gave at the Harvard Stadium show of that
probably,
song.
I'm sure she was doing it at some shows at the time, but nobody at that audience had heard a few of the songs, which was a pretty gutsy thing to do, play brand new material.
So you saw her live 3 times, and of course, you know, just as folks who are of a certain age will do, they will tell us, if you haven't seen her, you don't even know, right? Is that, I've heard that several times, if you haven't seen her live, you have no idea what her music was like. Is that true, what do you say about that?
It was true in the day. All you have to do now is go on YouTube and look up the Monterey Pop Festival and see her doing Ball and Chain. I think that was the song that turned her on to the world, that started to make her a star.
Down by my window, just looking out at the rain. By my window, just looking out at the rain.
Now that is the voice, right? That's the voice that sometimes folks don't always associate with Janis Joplin. Dee Dee, I'm wondering, you teach voice. Mm-hmm. When you hear Janis Joplin singing like that.
Does everything go wrong? I said people had to all go.
it shows a certain artistry that I think maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with. What do your students say about that?
Oh, my students adore Janis. Yeah. A lot of them want to sing like her. Mm. I think Janis was possibly the most misunderstood rock singer in the history of rock and roll. There was so much more to her voice than people sometimes remember. She gets, even today, she's somewhat controversial. People call her a shrieker.
Exactly.
She
right.
screamed, she didn't sing. But I don't know what people are listening to, because that's a perfect example of incredible subtlety that she could use.
Ball and chain.
She knew how to build and develop a song like nobody. She really got that distortion sound, but that was so much of a trademark that people forget the quieter moments she was capable of.
Do you think that that was really behind her rise to stardom, or was it the persona? Was it both?
It was everything. It was just the visceral punch of that voice. There was nothing like it at that time. I, as somebody who wanted desperately to be in a band from age 11, 12, there weren't female role models. This is something that we forget a lot now because it's so common to see women fronting bands. It was very unusual.
There are some folks who've criticized her popularity, and they've said that she, you know, maybe she used her sexuality too much to get attention to herself to become a female star.
Oh, well, place that against Miley Cyrus, and it seems very ridiculous.
Well, of course, today, certainly. Yeah.
It's that wasn't all she did. Plus, it was very honest. Her sexuality was her. She wasn't doing it to further her career. That was part of who she was. Mm. She was a total beatnik.
But there was a persona, right, that she had to maintain in a way. Don't both of you think that? I mean, was that difficult for her?
Probably. It was part of who she was, but then there was such a sensitive side of her as well.
That went along with the wild woman side that most of the fans kept on seeing and adoring.
Well, I've read one or two of the biographies, and for somebody who was so horribly bullied in childhood and up through college and treated so badly, I think that plays a role, too. She probably had a lot of self-disgust that she was dealing with, and that the alcohol and the drugs came into that.
Yet when she got on stage, I think that all went away. I would guess that there were times when she was on stage where she, having seen her three times, where she was so into what she was doing, so pleased to be where she was, that maybe she didn't even know an audience was there.
What song, Dee Dee, do you, when you think of Janis Joplin and you think is quintessential Janis Joplin?
Oh, well, I would say Cosmic Blues, because that's just a pull out the stops, this is me. And that's her anthem. That just seems to sum up everything she stood for. Of living for today, of being an individual, of not being afraid to be yourself. So that and I know Ed mentioned Summertime, which is...
Yeah. We have a little bit of Summertime, so let's listen. Dee Dee Stewart, I'm wondering, who would you compare today, a contemporary musician?
Today.
A lot of folks have said Janis Joplin paved the way for women artists, and particularly for folks almost like Madonna, maybe may have modeled some things after. I've read that.
Any of us girls out there would have to give the nod to Janis, or else we're not being honest. Certainly, you hear her in Melissa Etheridge. Mm-hmm. I hear her in Brittany Howard of Alabama Shakes. I think that to go to that those depths of pain is not that easy for people to do these days. People are turning a blind eye to pain. They don't want to be in pain. They don't want to relate to that kind of pain. I find that's very common. Mm-hmm. And that's a difficulty with a lot of students. I worked on some Janis tunes with a singer who I worked with, a lovely young girl who had been told she couldn't sing this kind of music by another teacher and should sing jazz. And she came to me crying. I said, well, of course I'll work with you. And I said, well, have you ever been in really deep pain? She said, no. Well, we'll try. You have to understand what it's like to be in those shoes to sing that way. Right now, it seems that the focus is back on that kind of singing. Gutsy, you know, explosive, with an enormous range of dynamics. And that's great fun for me because there's a lot to do with that.
There's one other thing about Janis, I think, that we've got to say that we've forgotten. She just had natural soul. There was so much of that in everything she did.
One of her big hits was released after her death on the Pearl album, which was Me and Bobby McGee. And I think we'll go out on that song. But I'd like both of you to talk a little bit about what you think of that song as sort of what is probably most popularly remembered. And you still hear it frequently. I do, on the radio today.
I can't listen to Kris Kristofferson's version anymore, and he wrote it. I think, actually, never mind her amazing performance, that is one of the best-produced recordings I have ever heard.
It keeps her alive in our hearts. We still see her thumbing a ride with some grungy friend from San Francisco and singing to the harmonica with some truck driver singing along. And every time I hear the song, I think of her as something eternal that way.
All right. Well, let's listen to a little of Me and Bobby McGee by Janis Joplin. We'll go out with that. Ed, I'd like to thank you for being with us. Ed Simkus is a music and film critic. Thank you.
Very welcome.
Also, Dee Dee Stewart, associate professor of voice at Berklee College of Music. Thank you as well.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Deborah Becker. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.